From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for October 22nd, 2017. Welcome once again to our weekly look at politics from City Hall to the State House and on to Washington, D.C. So grab that Sunday paper, go get that cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your week off to a great start. Well, it was a great season while it lasted, but I didn't have an entirely empty feeling when the L.A. Dodgers took the Cubs to task.
But they did it at Wrigley Field.
Huh?
They did it at Wrigley.
Well, but, you know, I just knew they would beat Washington.
It wasn't going to happen.
I knew they would beat Washington.
Yeah.
Remember, I told you I wasn't worried about them at all. But the Dodgers were just unbelievable.
And they were a good team all year.
Yeah, yes. But it just seemed like there was this combination of the bullpen and a hitting slump that, you know, that was the whole thing, right? Or is it just that the Dodgers' pitching was so good that we couldn't hit it anyway?
I think it's a combination of all of those things.
Yeah.
Plus some fatigue mentally, physically for the Cubs.
Yeah. But seeing Chris Baggio being thrown under the bus, I'm not sure that I would agree with that necessarily. I can't fault him for the way that the bullpen performed.
Right, and he's not a Joe Maddon guy. Remember, Maddon inherited Baggio. Baggio's a Dale Swaim hire. So the rumor is now that Joe Maddon wants to realign with Jim Hickey, who was his pitching coach in Tampa. Hickey is a free agent right now as far as the coaching goes. So that could be the move. They could bring in Jim Hickey. That's my guess.
And it was kind of interesting, though, seeing some of the Maddon criticism over the kind of pitching choices and when he started yanking pitchers and going to the bullpen. You know, he did bring us, God bless us, he brought a World Series championship.
He did? Really?
Well, but
you forget that. Some people forget that because, and I had to deal with this all the time. Like on,
I know you do. I know
on Twitter and on the shows that we do. Well, they should fire Maddon. Okay, if they fired Joe Maddon, there would be 29 teams at his doorstep within 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't take it to that extreme.
Some people do.
Why
it's amazing.
Not? Well, because it's easy. That's part of our social media.
It's
again,
lazy,
you know. Yes, it is. I mean, you can. They said the same thing about Quenneville in some cases.
That's true. I remember producing postgame in 2013 when the Hawks went down to the Bruins in the Cup final. The calls were to fire Quenneville, trade Kane, get rid of Crawford.
Right. Boom, boom, boom.
Uh huh.
And you still hear them, too. You
tic tac toe.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's always something in the great sports world that we have in Chicago. But truly, it was a great season for the Cubs, and I'm not disappointed by it. Third appearance in a row in the NLCS. I mean, come on.
Weren't we in first place for much of the latter half of the season?
Yes.
Not until really
right.
the halfway
but
mark.
After the All-Star game, they picked up and went into first place and stayed there in their division.
Yes.
Right, Sam?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they trailed by 5.5 at the break, and they were pretty much playing for their playoff lives all second half. They took pretty much, I felt like they took 2 out of 3 throughout the second half, and the bubble just seemed to burst, though, once they got into the NLCS. I'm looking at the runs here. In 4 games in the NLCS, well, in 4 losses, I should say, they scored 5 runs.
Yeah.
So that's why they lost, not because of Joe Maddon.
No, and that's why I said it's. I think it's obviously great Dodger pitching, but also I think they were in a slump too. They were in a batting slump too. So it'll be interesting to see whatever changes may arise and who comes back. And
somebody's going to go.
You know that.
I think it's one of the following three: Schwarber, Happ, Russell. One of those three will be traded because they need another starting pitcher.
I'm thinking Schwarber.
That's the popular one. Theo was gushing over Schwarber, though, on Friday. He had a press conference at Wrigley, talked for over an hour.
Yeah, I heard it was the press conference that never ended over there.
It started at 3, it ended at 10.
What?
No, it's about 3 to 4:15.
Ended at 10.
Felt like it. Well, I thought to myself on Thursday night, at least I'm done with Wrigley this year, and then Friday. Theo will meet the press at 3. Theo's great, though. I do trust him. You have to have faith in the guy. You should.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I can just very easily see Schwarber going over to the American League.
Oh, to the American League?
Yeah.
Not staying in the National.
DH-ing.
He can't field.
Right. He's the DH.
Did you see, by the way, Rick, who won the ALCS MVP?
No, I didn't.
Justin Verlander. He's a guy a lot of people thought the Cubs would go after at the deadline.
Correct.
And that was the rumor at the time. Schwarber for Verlander.
Right. That's right.
Verlander was
just
dominant in the ALCS.
Oh, man. And I know they're kicking themselves in Detroit these days, too, I bet, over that.
Well, now that we know that it's Houston and L.A. in the World Series, any picks as to who is going to be the champs for this year?
You first, Swanee.
Okay. Los Angeles. Just off the top of my head.
I think so, too. I agree.
Okay.
I will make it unanimous.
Oh, all right.
Yes. Although, it is funny seeing the Astros as the American League team. It just looks like National League versus National League. You know, I can't help it. But I have to go for the Dodgers. Absolutely, I have to go for the Dodgers. I'm going to stick with the National League there.
First World Series for Los Angeles since 1988. And now, 1989, I'm sorry, 89.
And did they win that with Tommy Lasorda?
Yes.
That one? Yeah.
Yeah, and then the Astros, of course, their first one since 2005 when they lost to...
Ding, ding, ding.
The White Sox.
Correct.
Ah, 2005.
Yes.
Right.
Amazing how we all remember the winners.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of winners, a good Blackhawks game against the Yotes last night.
And now the Blackhawks go to Vegas.
I know. This was the trip I wanted to make. It's the lone game they play in Vegas.
They asked Quenneville about that last night because the Hawks, they played last night. They've got Sunday and Monday off. They play Tuesday. And they asked him about, you know, all the downtime in Vegas. And he said, I trust our guys. Our guys are smart.
You say it's the lone game. Is this the only game of the season that they play in Vegas?
I believe it is.
Yes, it is.
Wow.
And I was kind of irritated that it was so early in the season.
I was going to say, it's so early, and this is the one game, and not you know, for the rest of the season. So if they play Vegas, they come here then.
Yes, the Golden Knights will be here. I'm not sure when. But I'd kind of thought about maybe after the primary election, if there was a March date that they were playing, maybe a trip out to Vegas to see the Hawks.
Breaking news. Yeah. At Las Vegas.
Yes.
February 13th.
Yeah, too close to the election.
Okay.
Oh, man. I thought it was just the one. Okay. So that means they'll be here twice.
They're here on January 5th, and it looks like that's it.
Oh,
looks like three meetings against Vegas.
All right. Well, it will be fun to watch. And as I've told everybody, you got to imagine that there's not going to be a lot of home crowds for the Golden Knights.
They've been selling out, though.
I know that, and they're. But you think of the fact that everybody that travels wants to go to Vegas to go see their team. You know, I mean, it can't be that hard to want to go to Vegas and watch a hockey game and then go out by the pool.
Field trip, February.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Sam, we should do the show from there.
Sam, you're in charge.
Okay.
You're in charge.
All right.
Okay.
That's a bad sign.
Would you say it's a gamble? Get it?
Ugh.
It's a gamble?
Schwanee gets another seat in the upper deck.
Put him behind the post in the upper deck
by himself.
Yes, thanks a lot.
You can sit next to Wayne Newton, Johnny.
Perfect. Perfect. Oh, man. Well, this town was just so filled with – we had the Dodgers fans that were in town, and I think a lot of them stayed over for the USC-Notre Dame game.
Probably wish they didn't.
Yeah, so what – I regret I didn't make the bell for the final score.
49-14. Wow. Irish.
Wow. Wow. That's punishment right there. Man. But yeah, we had all of those tourists. We got all kinds of tourists here with the new Apple store that just opened up on Friday evening. And, I will say, I don't know how to work an Apple PC. I'm an old Windows Microsoft guy, but that store is absolutely gorgeous. It's just stunning.
I'm going to take time to take a look at that when I'm done here today. I mean, it's right outside the door, so I have to.
You going to do any shopping?
I don't know. I just might. We'll see. Okay. Those are very appealing stores.
Question, when did they get rid of the Mr. Rogers and Abe Lincoln statue? How long has that been gone for?
A month or so, yeah. Several weeks, up to a month. Yeah.
I was wondering. I'm like, something's missing here.
Bring back the Marilyn Monroe statue.
Nope.
You don't want that?
Nobody missed those things.
I didn't say I missed them. I just, something was gone, and I couldn't figure out what it was.
They just look like clown figures. I mean, I forget where the – I think the Lincoln statue is actually heading to, like, Peoria.
I think it's in Peoria, yes. Yeah.
So, Sam, there you go. You take a trip down to Peoria, and you can go, you know, feel good again about the Lincoln statue. it was a hideous thing. My gosh.
It was just so big and obnoxious, too.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's all.
Like 20 feet tall.
Yeah, it's like those, you know, Paul Bunyan fiberglass characters that you find, in, you know, on roadside places, U.S. 66 style. Right, Schwani?
Yeah, you do. The statues, I think there's a restaurant of a robot or a spaceman not all that far from here around Wilmington. So, you know, it's like those. Those are fun, though. Those are fun.
There you go. Your idea of fun. I want to go to Vegas and watch the
Blackhawks. They're a throwback. But they're a throwback.
Yes. Well, there you go. That opens the door
for
Sam.
They're a throwback.
Sam, who's too young to know throwback, right?
I don't know what we're talking about.
I don't either.
As is often the case.
Yes. So we got the Bears playing at noon at home today against Carolina. Have no idea what that's going to look like. And frankly, it sounds, according to what I saw for the forecast, too, that's when the rain's going to start coming down right during the football game. So I don't know how that who that favors.
Actually, that's true, around 1 o'clock.
Yeah. So
Bears have been good at home this year, though. They've been really good at home. Really close against Atlanta. They beat Pittsburgh.
Yeah. What's their record?
Bears right now? I think they're, what, 2-4?
Yeah, right.
Is that right? That sounds
right.
That's,
yeah, 2-4. Yeah. That's correct.
Yeah. I should know this.
And who's favored today?
Carolina by 3, and their middle linebacker's not playing. Luke Kuechly, he's one of the best in the game. He's out with a concussion. So the middle linebacker is very important. That's like the quarterback of your defense. He is not playing, so that bodes well for Mitch Trubisky. That's nothing but positive to not have to face Luke Kuechly.
All right. Well, there's something to look forward to for the Bears.
And it's, you know, every game we play, it's like closer and closer to the end of the John Fox era. So that's exciting, too. You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Nice to chip that one in, though. That was a nice shot.
That's what
there.
I wanted to do when I woke up this morning.
Excellent. Oh, well, Dave's here to keep us up on all the news. Sam's got the latest sports. Producer Tom is here with us today to field your phone calls. We're at 312-981-7200. That's also our text line, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. Twitter at symbol Sunday Spin. Engineer Bob is taking a glance at the new Apple store and looking for a new iPhone. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. Coming up, we're going to have our weekly spin through national politics. And then after 7:30, we're going to kind of revisit the debate forum that was held at Aurora University among the Democratic candidates for governor, play some of the highlights of that. And then we'll be speaking to Democratic State Representative Anna Mohler from Elgin. We'll talk to her about her efforts to seek an override of legislation that's designed to get us to the point of equal pay, that legislation vetoed by Governor Bruce Rauner. That's all coming up. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. Time for our weekly spin through national politics. And much of the week dominated over the controversy involving President Trump's call to the grieving widow of Sergeant LaDavid Johnson, one of four Green Berets killed in Niger, deaths that are under investigation. LaDavid Johnson was laid to rest yesterday, but that still didn't stop President Trump from calling Florida Congresswoman Frederica Wilson wacky. She said she overheard the phone call from the president, and here's how she described that call to CNN's Don Lemon.
Well, basically, he said, well, I guess he knew what he signed up for, but I guess it still hurts. That's what he said.
The president said to her, he knew what he signed up for.
He knew what he was signing up for.
But when it happens, it hurts anyway.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So it's almost as if this is a young woman who has two children, who is 6 months pregnant with a third child. She has just lost her husband. She was just told that he cannot have an open casket funeral, which gives her all kinds of nightmares, how his body must look, how his face must look. And this is what the president of the United States says to her?
So the president said he didn't say what Wilson said he said. And as he's often done in the past, Trump said he had proof to back him up. Here's the president.
I did not say what she said, and I'd like her to make the statement again, because I did not say what she said. I had a very nice conversation with the woman, with the wife, who is sounded like a lovely woman, did not say what the congresswoman said, and most people aren't too surprised to hear
that.
What
is the proof, Mr. President?
Let her make her statement again, and then you'll find out.
So we'll find out, but of course there is no proof, and as he has said so many times in the past, leaving people thinking there's a tape or a transcript or something else, there isn't any. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. We've been talking about the controversy over President Trump and the grieving widow of Sergeant LaDavid Johnson. And, you know, you look at the things that all occurred in this. So you had the president claiming that past presidents didn't call Gold Star families, which that was not true. He claimed that he called the families of virtually everybody killed in action during his presidency. In fact, on Friday, roll call found emails showing that the White House scrambled to get a list of people to call after Trump made that claim. He sent out the president, his chief of staff, former Marine General John Kelly. Himself, his son, died in Afghanistan in service to the country. The former Marine General came to the president's defense, and Kelly criticized the Florida congresswoman in the White House briefing room.
I was stunned when I came to work yesterday morning and brokenhearted at what I saw a member of Congress doing. A member of Congress who listened in on a phone call from the President of the United States to a young wife, and in his way tried to express that opinion. He's a brave man, a fallen hero. He knew what he was getting himself into because he enlisted. There's no reason to enlist. He enlisted. And he was where he wanted to be, exactly where he wanted to be, with exactly the people he wanted to be with.
Now, of course, Kelly did not counter what the president had said, that the president never said what he said. But one thing that Kelly did do, he went on criticizing Congresswoman Wilson for allegedly claiming credit for the funding of an FBI building in Florida. But a review of the tape shows that she didn't claim credit for it at the speech that General Kelly attended, and that in disparaging this, the media asked that Kelly address his false statements, and White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders told the media that it's highly inappropriate to question a general, further creating the controversy. There is one person, I mean, if you remember this administration, this is the same administration where Stephen Miller said that told reporters that the president's authority will not be questioned. But one person who is questioning the president's authority is Arizona Senator John McCain. Receiving the Liberty Medal, McCain attacked Donald Trump's worldview.
To fear the world we have organized and led the three quarters of a century, to abandon the ideals we have advanced around the globe, to refuse the obligations of international leadership and our duty to remain the last best hope of Earth for the sake of some half-baked, spurious nationalism cooked up by people who would rather find scapegoats than solve problems is as unpatriotic as an attachment to any other tired dogma of the past that Americans consigned to the ash heap of history. We live in a land made of ideals, not blood and soil. We are the custodians of those ideals at home and their champion abroad. We've done great good in the world. That leadership has had its costs, but we have become incomparably powerful and wealthy as we did. We have a moral obligation to continue in our just cause, and we would bring more than shame on ourselves if we don't.
That's Arizona Senator John McCain. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hear the candidates from the Democratic Gubernatorial Forum that was held out at Aurora University as part of its Town Square series. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Last Tuesday, I had the pleasure of being asked to moderate a forum of the leading Democratic candidates for governor out at Aurora University, part of the Aurora University Town Square series that I've been just enjoyed being so much a part of. Discussions on human trafficking, discussions on immigration reform policy, discussions with David Axelrod, Tom Dart, we've got one coming up next month with Ray LaHood about, frankly, can politics ever be civil again? Just very much enjoy doing this, and I was asked to moderate this panel, and I wanted to play some of the highlights of it, and I want to start out with actually the very first question that I asked is, you know, given the enormous amounts of money going into political campaigns and elections, you know, is this just a rich person's game? So here we go.
Is this just a rich person's game, or looking at this table, is this just a rich man's game, politics these days, that regular people really can't participate in?
You know, this race is about values. They're about progressive democratic values and what we stand for. I think many of you have seen that I've tried to run a campaign where I've put forward my own ideas and in fact come up with plans for the state of Illinois and try to communicate that with you. It's important to get out and communicate because, unfortunately, our current governor wrote himself a check at the beginning of December for $50 million, and then he raised another $20 or $30 million.
He got $20 million from Ken Griffin.
He did, and from other wealthy Republicans. And so, unfortunately, he set us on a course here that I think is going to mean that we Democrats have got to build the infrastructure of the party back, the infrastructure that we've lost. It's important that we knock on doors, that we make sure we're phone banking, that we're yes, up on the air, but it also means that, you know, we Democrats, we've got to join together to go beat Bruce Rauner. That is the campaign that I'm trying to put together, not just here in the primary, but also for the general election. It's going to be important for us to go out and beat Bruce Rauner, and that's why I've funded this campaign. But okay. One thing you know is that I, you know, am not, you know, beholden to any special interests. My only interest is in the people of Illinois.
Chris Kennedy, you come from a wealthy family.
I thought I did.
Oh, you do.
I think all of us are outraged by the amount of money that is flowing into this race and every race. And I think J.B. rightly points out that this was started by the Republican Party in Illinois, and we need to respond to what they've done. The notion that you have to be incredibly wealthy to serve in politics, that you have to be incredibly wealthy to serve in government, that if that's true, it's the end of American democracy. If that's true, it's the end of American democracy. The great thing that separated this country from every other country in the world was the notion of the American dream. The idea that you could tell your children with a straight face that they could grow up to do anything that they wanted to do in life. If they wanted to grow up to become a policeman or serve as a firefighter, if they wanted to be an astronaut, that they could do all of those things. Question is today, can we say to them, you too can also run for governor, become a congressman, serve as a United States senator? And is that true anymore? We're on the cusp of it not being true, and we need to stop it. We need to rise up in this state and make it clear that anybody can serve in office. You don't need deep pockets. You don't need big bucks. You need strong ideas, like J.B. has said. And it ought to be the clash of ideas.
Thank you. Mr. Biss.
Well, thank you, Rick, for the question. Thank you to Aurora University for hosting. And as much as I appreciate that question, Rick, I was a little sad about the way you asked it, because when you mentioned the contributions that some candidates have made to their own campaigns, you didn't mention mine. But I'm all in, too. I donated $25 to my campaign. And then
I think that was below the reporting threshold. That might be why I didn't see it.
And then my wife gave 50, actually. So we're getting up there. We're inching up. I think the future of our democracy is at stake here. We got to decide if we want to have an election or do we want to have an auction. And I think it's true that we have to build that Democratic Party infrastructure, but we don't build it with money. We build it with people. And so I'm building this campaign with people. I'm building this campaign with a movement of people coming together with a hunger to transform the state of Illinois, to build a progressive future for the state of Illinois. And I'm funding the campaign in the same way. And so when you mentioned that we have close to $2.7 million in the bank as of the end of September, that's because of thousands and thousands and thousands of people who understand that if we want a government that works for the rest of us, we have to have a campaign that we all jointly have a stake in. That's how we're going to rebuild the Democratic Party. And by the way, that's how we're going to beat Bruce Rauner, by running a campaign based on that kind of contrast, based on people, and based on a movement to transform our state.
Mr. Diber, you're the only downstate candidate for governor in the Democratic field from my beloved one-time Edwardsville, Illinois, Madison County Regional Superintendent of Schools. But yet, you have to get name recognition, and a sad fact of life is name recognition costs money.
That's true, and that's why we campaign hard each and every day. And, you know, money can do a lot for you in advertisement, but it doesn't do a lot for you in the human factor. So our performance is very essential, that each and every time we make a public appearance, that we have the ability to track voters and supporters to our campaign, and that we are on message as to how we're going to resolve the real issue of the state of Illinois and its financial crisis, and how we're going to move this state forward. You know, I am a living example, I think, of what Chris just mentioned, that an everyday guy, a local elected official, as there are many in this room, can run for governor. And you can do it. It's not as easy. is if you've got millions of dollars to finance your campaign. You have to be very clever. You have to be very savvy. You have to know how you're going to target your voters. You have to know how you're going to get your percentages, and you've got to get the most bang for the buck. I am proud of the fact that I've outraised J.B. Pritzker. I just found that out, J.B., because I've raised more than $7,000. So that just made me feel real good inside. But all joking aside, we need to be able to allow people, I say all people, who are local elected officials, who have really good ideas, to be able to serve in the highest level of state government. Many people told me when I made this announcement that it couldn't be done. And I said, you know, the day I made my announcement, if anybody's watched it, I said, the road to Jericho was not an easy route. It was winding, it was twisty, but along the way there was a good Samaritan. Okay, so I continue to meet those good Samaritans that are just so valuable that are making my campaign possible.
Thank
that's
you,
how
Mr.
you do
Diver.
It.
Mr. Hardiman, you've run before.
Yes.
You have an idea of what it takes for resources.
For sure. Well, I'm the only candidate that's running for governor that can run for statewide office. I ran in 2014, and we secured close to 30% of the state vote with about $30,000. Like Mr. Diver was saying, it's all about the people speaking up for what they want to do. I did some math. You only have 17 billionaires that live in Illinois. If all the billionaires support one another, they would have 17 votes, okay? So what I'm talking about here is that I'm the guy that's running for governor. I'm dead serious about it, and we have a 2020 plan for the state. We plan to raise a little bit more money, but right now I want to make this clear to everybody. My staff are circulating petitions throughout the entire state right now, all through the state. I can't even name all the counties right now because there's too many to name. My petitions are being circulated. Our website is doing real good, and we're going to win this election here. I plan to make history by becoming the first candidate that ever defeated big money politics in Illinois.
That was T.O. Hardiman, who ran against Governor Quinn previously. Now, as I said, this was out at Aurora University. A big question being, after the two-year-plus state budget impasse and the devastating toll it took on higher education, how could you, as a governor, restore confidence in Illinois' higher education system and also help that monetary award program, that financial need-based grant program that also got caught in the switches? We'll begin with State Senator Daniel Biss.
I tell people Bruce Rauner has been a really bad governor for the state of Illinois, but the University of Wisconsin never had a better governor than Bruce Rauner. He has expelled our students from the state and moved them elsewhere, and we have to start by passing a normal, sane budget that properly funds our universities and community colleges, and then we have to start increasing our investment to move to free tuition at public universities and community colleges.
Chris Kennedy.
Say the greatest economic engine we have in the state is our system of public higher education. The same thing that drives success in the great economies of the United States, in Silicon Valley, in Austin, Texas, in Research Triangle, North Carolina, in Boston, Massachusetts, in Pittsburgh, is the system of higher education, public research universities that they have and they support. If we support our great research universities in this state, we'll have the best economy there is in America.
Bob Diver.
Well, first and foremost, we have to rebuild Illinois' higher education system because this administration's allowed it to crumble. It's terrible when you go to Western Illinois University and you learn that professors there are being asked to take furlough days, the same at Eastern Illinois University. Southern Illinois University of Carbondale's in such bad financial shape they're borrowing money from Southern Illinois University of Edwardsville to make payroll. You know, so our university system in the state of Illinois has to be rebuilt to keep young people in Illinois because they are leaving. 16,000 left last year to go elsewhere. They'll never come back here to raise a family, pay taxes, and be a wage earner in this state. And we have got to change that, and we're going to have to rebuild higher ed in the next 4 years.
J.B. Pritzker.
Yeah, we've got the most educated, dedicated workforce in the entire nation here in this state, and that's no thanks to Bruce Rauner. His budget cuts, frankly, his unwillingness to fund our higher education has let faculty leave the state. There are 72,000 fewer kids going to school in Illinois under Bruce Rauner. Now, remember, when they leave our state, they are 70% likely to stay where they went to and not come back to the state of Illinois. Remember, these are our kids, but they're also our future, our economic future in this state. These are the folks who are going to create jobs and who are going to, you know, frankly, help us grow this economy. It's got to be a focus in this state on rebuilding our university education, our community colleges, not just because we're going to create jobs rebuilding it, but also because the people who graduate are our best economic resources.
We're listening to highlights of last Tuesday's Democratic gubernatorial candidate forum held at Aurora University as part of their Town Square series. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. I'm very happy to have a in-studio observer, guest, friend here today with the show, Daryl Wendell. And Daryl was kind enough to, I guess, bid for this and win a silent auction prize with the Literacy Volunteers of Illinois as part of their Scrabble, annual Scrabble event, which is coming up, by the way. It's Sunday, November 5th from 1 to 6 p.m. at Grossinger's Honda at 6600 Northwestern Avenue. All kinds of fun there. You can play Scrabble. There's actually a real Scrabble tournament for those competitive people. I've never actually won anything there. but it's a great time, and as you all know who are friends of the show, Literacy Volunteers of Illinois, a very important part of the social fabric of this state. And so if you want to go to lvillinois.org, you can get more information about this. As I mentioned, there's silent auction prizes, all kinds of different things and fun activities, and you're helping out a very good cause. So that's, again, coming up Sunday, November 5th, from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Grossinger's Honda, 6600 Northwestern Avenue. And again, more information available at lvillinois.org. Well, we're continuing our highlights of last Tuesday's Democratic Gubernatorial Forum. And, of course, one of the subjects that frequently has come up in covering the campaigns of these Democratic candidates is the issue of House Speaker Michael Madigan. Obviously, Governor Rauner has been successful in demonizing the Illinois House Speaker. And so I thought it was appropriate to ask these candidates, should he stay? Should he go? Has he been around too long? And how do you keep him from running you? We'll start with Chris Kennedy.
I don't think that what Speaker Madigan is doing is illegal. I just think it should be. So he's a property tax appeals lawyer. He's a state rep, and he's a property tax appeals lawyer. And the problem with that is that it leads to us holding on to a system where we fund our schools with property taxes. If we want great outcomes, we have to fund them with a progressive graduated income tax. 100% of state reps know that. 100% of state senators know that. Every Democrat knows that. The Democrats had a supermajority in the House, a supermajority in the Senate, controlled the governor's mansion, did nothing to move our state
should
in the
we
direction.
Should we get rid of the property tax? Or should local units of government have an option to be able to
They should
pay
have
more?
An option, but the fact is we did not move that way because Mike Madigan makes money on a system that's destroying our schools. And when it destroys our schools, it robs our kids of a future. It's wrecking our economy, and it will destroy our state. And if we don't stop it, terrible things are going to happen, and we need to make it end.
Senator Biss, you haven't been shy about saying you think Mike Madigan's been around too long.
That's right. Mike Madigan's been around too long. Mike Madigan's too powerful. I think that power holds back the state of Illinois. And frankly, as a very proud Democrat, I think it holds back the Democratic Party in Illinois as well. And that's why, since long before I'd ever heard of Governor Rauner, back in the blissful days of my life, I was running for office on a platform of limiting how long someone can serve as Speaker of the House. That's just the right thing to do, and I introduced constitutional amendments multiple times during my time as a state legislator to do just that. But let me say one more thing. We have a broken system here. And I think if we get too obsessed with just one person who has manipulated the system but did not create it, and then we don't fix the system but just get rid of him, we're going to be disappointed by how little changes. Yes, Mike Madigan's been there too long, and yes, he's too powerful, and yes, it's time for him to go, but we've got to get to the root of the problem and reform our system by building a people's movement that can genuinely pressure the legislature to finally act in the public interest, and that's what my campaign is all about.
Mr. Pritzker.
Well, I've been an independent.
I'll repeat the individual questions if you want.
No, I think I got okay. Look, I've been an independent progressive leader for my whole life, and that's not going to change when I go to Springfield if I get elected governor. But, you know, there are things that I'll agree with Mike Madigan about, and there are things that I'll disagree with the speaker about. For example, I'm in favor of independently drawn legislative maps. I think we should have more competitive elections for the people of Illinois to make choices in. I'm in favor of leadership term limits, which would limit the speaker's term. I think those are things that probably the Speaker of the House doesn't agree with me about. But
has he been around too long?
Bruce Rauner, he's been around an awful long time.
Is it too long?
I think leadership term limits is really an answer to that question. Unlike Bruce Rauner, I'll work with the speaker, whoever the speaker is, by the way. I'll work with the speaker on the things that really matter and are important to the people of Illinois, and there's no chance that I'm going to be working for the speaker. The only people I'm going to work for are the people of Illinois.
Mr. Diver.
Well, first of all, I'm in favor of leadership term limits because I believe if they are enacted, it begins to set a parameter on how long leadership is in total control. And I think that that's the issue that the general public in Illinois is discussing. But how do I feel about Mike Madigan? Well, annually, I say hi to him. I shake hands with him. He knows me. I know him. And I look forward to working with him. Because I'll tell you what, I'm going to give this guy a lot of credit. This guy's accomplished a tremendous lot for the state of Illinois and isn't given any credit for it. He has held Illinois together in difficult times. He overrode the governor's veto, so we had a budget. He got an education bill passed so that we opened our schools, and here we are again tonight bashing Speaker Mike Madigan. So I give people credit where credit's deserved, so tonight I'm going to take my hat off to him and make this statement that I respect the man. I respect him for all that he's done for as long as he's been in the legislature. Now, do I think he's been there too long? That's up to the people to decide. If they reelect him, then the answer is no, he's not been there too long. But if you want him to go, you got to take him out of office, and he's elected by his constituents.
Mr. Hardiman.
No, I support term limits for elected officials, and it wasn't just Mike Madigan that helped the state move forward. It was the entire General Assembly. So we have to give credit to all the members of the General Assembly, the senators, and the state representatives. But I would have to work with Mike Madigan, regardless how I feel about him holding the state hostage. What Bruce Rauner ran into is a conflict with seniority and big money with Mike Madigan. And Rauner thought he was going to shake up Springfield. But what he did, he shook up the poor and working class people instead. Mike Madigan is there. I believe when I become governor, Mike Madigan might retire, though, if I become governor.
You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. We're going through some of the highlights of the Aurora University Democratic Gubernatorial Forum, which I was fortunate enough to host last Tuesday. One of the questions that I had was about the issue of insider-outsider. And in this competition among these candidates, everyone trying to claim the outside lane here rather than being the insider. And the question that I raised was, while we right now have a governor who was outside of the political sphere, and now, is it wrong to maybe want to have somebody who knows the inside game. So let's start with J.B. Pritzker.
As a progressive Democrat, I have spent a lifetime fighting for those values. For example, there are 230,000 kids in the state of Illinois who get school breakfast because I helped to expand President Obama's program called No Kid Hungry all across the state in low-income school districts.
But are you an outsider?
Yes, and what I'm trying to tell you is I've accomplished a great deal. In fact, I've gone after really big things for the people of Illinois, frankly, without much help from the government of Illinois or the politicians in Illinois, but I have worked hard to make sure that we're all driving toward these big things. Building a Holocaust museum that serves more than 60,000 kids who learn to fight bigotry and hatred and intolerance every single year, and thousands of teachers. Those are all big things to accomplish for the state of Illinois. That makes me the biggest outsider in this race, that I have accomplished those things without serving for many years in government or answering to the leaders in Springfield.
Senator Biss.
Here's what I think we want. I think we want someone who's not beholden to the system. I think we shouldn't elect Mike Madigan's candidate for governor, because I think we need a governor who's independent of Mike Madigan. I think we need someone who understands how government works as well. I think we need someone who does not feel owned by the system but knows how to operate within the system. I think with Bruce Rauner as our governor and Donald Trump as our president, we need someone with experience passing bills. I think we have enough inexperienced businessmen in government. I think it's time to try a different approach. But the person who we put in should be someone who knows how to stand up to the entrenched interests that have not served the public. If Mike Madigan had his way, I never would have been a legislator in the first place. He didn't get his way. If he gets his way now, I'm not going to be governor. He's not going to get his way then either. And then we're going to have a government who's responsive to the people of Illinois, not the system that has failed the people of Illinois.
Bob Diver.
Well, I've served in government for 22 years, so I guess you could say I'm an insider. But I don't think that I'm the chosen one in this race. All right? I look at myself as the outsider. I look at myself as the local elected official who stood up with the courage and said that we need to change Illinois. And we need to change Illinois for the everyday person. We need to change Illinois for local elected officials to make sure that they get what they need to operate their communities and their counties. So in saying that, I look at myself as the outsider in the race. Anyone that's self-funded at a low amount of money is definitely not getting any inside money, so look at my financial records. So that is how you judge who is an insider, who is an outsider.
Chris Kennedy.
There are 30 high schools in Chicago alone where the average ACT score is a 14 or a 15. 75% of the kids who graduate any public high school in the state of Illinois go to a school that's so underfunded that they become so undereducated that they can't go to community college or university without remedial education. When I graduated from high school and college, we moved to where the jobs were. Now the jobs are moving to where the highly educated kids are. If we don't produce them, we put our economy at risk. We have terrible educational outcomes for our kids because we pay for our schools with property taxes. We pay for our schools with property taxes because our senior elected officials, our property tax appeals lawyers, making money on a system, destroying our education, wrecking our kids' futures, dooming them to a life of economic servitude, and wrecking our state. You can make up your mind whether I'm the insider or the outsider.
You want me to answer the question?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Apologize.
Well, that makes me an outsider. Check it out.
You're on the outside end of that.
That's right. No, you're okay. That's my friend. We're good. This is the reality with T.O. Hardeman. I'm definitely an outsider. I'm running to become the first black governor of the state of Illinois. I'm not saying that because I'm African American. I'm saying it because I'm qualified. I don't have no ties to machine politics. Anytime you've been endorsed by the machine, that actually makes you an insider, okay? If you've been endorsed by the machine, you've been endorsed by most of the politicians throughout the state, that makes you an insider. That's the reality. But just to answer your question, I'm an outsider, but I plan to work with everybody because you must be a problem solver once you become the governor. You must be a problem solver. And last but not least, I was at a forum, at the Environmental Forum. It was all white audience, and they say, T.O., what are you going to do about white privilege when you become governor? I say the solution to white privilege is standing right in front of you. help me become the governor. We can end a lot of that. And that's no slight to nobody. I love all people. I want to make that crystal clear. But I'm definitely an outsider, to make a long story short.
Now, one other thing that I asked the candidates were, you know, this is a large field of candidates. On most issues, there's not much light between them on where their differences are. So what is the one thing that distinguishes you from the rest of the field?
Our democracy is in crisis. We have to decide if we're going to have elections or auctions. We have to decide if we're going to look at a situation where Donald Trump got elected president and Bruce Rauner got elected governor, and the Democratic Party asking itself who it's going to be, who we're going to be. Do we say, yeah, let's do some more of that? Or do we pick a different path forward? I'm not a billionaire. I'm not a millionaire. I live a middle-class life. My kids go to their neighborhood public school. They share a bedroom. But I know how to fight for ordinary people. I've passed 80 laws in Springfield, building coalitions people didn't think were going to get built, defeating special interests people thought couldn't get beaten. I think we've got to ask who we are as a party. And the answer that we give in this election, in this moment, is going to reverberate around the country, and it's going to reverberate across the decades.
Thank you, Senator Biss. Mr. Pritzker.
Well, I'd like to begin simply by thanking Aurora University and Rick Pearson and the leaders here and all of you in the audience. Let me say that the most important difference that I bring to this race is I've gotten real things done, big things for people all across the state of Illinois. I've spent decades doing it. I think it's worth asking about all the candidates. What were you doing when nobody was watching, when you weren't running for public office, to really improve the lives of the people of Illinois? And I've talked about some of the things that I've done, expanding the school breakfast program to low-income kids across the state, early childhood education for thousands of kids, quality preschool and quality child care, building a Holocaust museum, opening 1871, 7,000 jobs created. Those were all things that I did. But I didn't do those by writing a check. I did those by organizing, by bringing the leaders together. We're talking about elected leaders and nonprofit leaders and ordinary Illinoisans who care deeply about those issues, and leading and providing vision, and then everybody pull
Thank
on the
you, Mr. Pritzker.
Oar together, and that's what I'll do in Springfield as your governor.
Chris Kennedy.
I'll fight for the future of this state. More jobs, more companies have moved to Illinois to open an office for the first time in the Merchandise Mart Center than in any other location in the state. I know what it takes to get companies to move here and to expand once they arrive. They want access to great minds. The reason people are moving into downtown Chicago is the largest college town in America. But we need to fuel that. And we cannot build an economy when 75% of our kids need remedial education before they go to community college or to university or to trade school. We have those bad outcomes because our elected officials make money on that system. And I'm going to stand up to them. I'm going to go to them and make it illegal for elected officials to have outside jobs that are adverse to the interests of the body they were elected to serve.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. Mr. Hardiman.
Well, I'm different because I'm a progressive Democrat. I know what it takes to go to school at night, work two or three jobs just to make ends meet. I've worked on all levels in society. God has blessed me. I was born and raised in the heart of the ghetto, but God has blessed me in my career. I've sat down in sessions with former Prime Minister David Cameron during my career, Queen Noor from Jordan, not just to try to hype nothing. It's just I've been around good people. We all come from royalty, and I plan to really represent everybody in the state of Illinois. That's what makes me different. We have a 2020 plan, which represents a perfect vision for the people of Illinois, which includes supporting the seniors, the college students, the veterans, the young children, everybody, the mental health community.
Thank you, Mr. Hardiman.
That's it? All right, well,
Mr. Diver.
What differentiates me is I'm the only downstate candidate. I'm the first person in 20 years to have the courage to do this, to run from downstate for governor. My campaign is to unite all of Illinois, to bring downstate with Chicago, connect us together. For 22 years, I've served in local government. I understand that governing is an art. It's something that takes a personal skill to bring people together in the General Assembly. That's what I will do. I'm also the only candidate who's been president of a union. I've bargained contracts. I've sat on both sides of the table. I'm also the only candidate that comes from a farm family, still actively involved. I own a centennial farm. I understand the largest industry in Illinois and been involved in it for over 100 years. My family has.
That was the Democratic highlights from the Democratic Gubernatorial Forum held at Aurora University on Tuesday. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue, joining me here in studio this morning is Democratic State Representative Anna Moeller from Elgin, Melissa Josephs, who's Director of Equal Opportunity Policy with Women Employed, and Wendy Pollack, Founder and Director of the Women's Law and Policy Project at the Shriver Center. And I wanted to, ladies, thank you so much for joining me this morning. Big issue going on in Springfield. We've got the veto session that's coming up, and it's going to be an interesting veto session because of some of the rancor that's involving Republicans and Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. But also, veto sessions are always interesting because it's a chance to look at some of the actions that the governor has taken, and one involves what's known as House Bill 2462. And this is legislation that would basically bar employers from asking about a previous salary history in hiring people. And I'll let you go first here. How does that get to the goal of equal pay?
Thank you so much for having us, Rick. It's great to be here again.
I wanted to start with a simple question first.
A simple question, yes. We feel that this gets to addressing the wage gap that we have here in Illinois. Women still, on average, get paid about 80% less than men for equal work. And it's been illegal for 50 years to pay women less than men for equal work. However, there are systemic reasons why we still have that wage gap. One of them is the fact that women, when they first start out in their careers, tend to make less than their male counterparts. And if you're basing future pay on
it's like a trajectory
prior,
kind of issue.
Exactly. On prior wages, you're just perpetuating and extending that inequity throughout a woman's career. When you take that out of the equation, using prior wages as a factor in determining future wages, you're more likely to eliminate or address that gap. And that's why we are that's why we've brought this legislation to the General Assembly, and why we are optimistic and hopeful that we will override the governor's veto of this bill next week or in the following week after.
Well, Melissa, this bill did get strong bipartisan support, particularly mm-hmm. in the House. I think it had 92 votes when it passed. It which you only need 71 to override. But the Senate vote was, I thought, was interesting because it was not a veto-proof majority. It was more of a party line, 35-18, I think, was the result on that. I mean, certainly, as I mentioned, there's some rancor going on in the Republican ranks in Springfield. But the governor, which I thought was interesting, he outright vetoed the bill, but he basically offered up a rewrite of the bill, saying that there's a better model for doing this in Massachusetts. Why is that not a better model?
It's not a better model because there were a couple points he made, but the one that's really easiest to flesh out, and if anybody here can figure out why that is, you know, explain it to me. But he's saying that there is one opportunity when an employer would be able to check what your previous salary is, and that's after, let's say, I'm getting a job here, Rick, you and I have talked about it, you've offered me the job, you've told me what the salary is going to be, but before I start, then you have like one opportunity to check on what my previous salary is. And there just doesn't seem to be any reason for it, because let's say you find out that I was making less in my previous job. You might then have an opportunity to sort of lowball and say, oh, I'm not going to pay her that much. I don't need to in order to get her. Maybe I just need to give her a little bit more. So we don't see that there's ever a reason for an employer to have to know what someone's previous salary is, because employers should figure out based on their budget, based on what the market is like, what the salary is or a salary range is. And then you find someone who you think can do the job based on their skills and their experience. A lot of people might be coming from maybe the not-for-profit world or academia, and they might be getting paid less. That doesn't mean they have to continue getting that. If they go into a different sector, they should be getting what other people are paying. So it's been commonplace, but it'll be an easy change that employers just won't be able to ask that one question.
Well, Wendy, is it common that employers do ask?
Yes, it's a very common practice. I mean, it's almost like a tradition that they do ask. And, you know, even my organization used to ask, you know, and we're going to stop that. So, yes, it's a common practice. And when you ask people, like, why they do it, that really is the response. Well, we've always done it that way. But that doesn't mean it's the right way to do. And that doesn't mean that their, you know, their business will be harmed by stopping it.
But this is systemic.
Yes, it is systemic. And interestingly enough, I was talking to a reporter from another state the other day on why so many folks, and particularly women, continue working past retirement age. And, you know, clearly there's folks who just like their jobs and want to continue, and because people are healthier and are living longer, they want to do it. But for low-income women in particular, this is, you know, it follows them into retirement. And so they're at a place where they can't really retire because they can't afford it. You know, they can't get the savings they need, you know, because their salaries are lower as they go through their careers. And then once they're there, you know, they have less in Social Security. They have less in pensions. If that's available, they have left in their 401ks. And only about 50% of people have 401ks. So women are disproportionately, you know, impacted as throughout their careers and into retirement.
Can I add something to your question about, is that okay, of how systemic it is? A lot of people who are applying for jobs will know that even when they go online, which a lot of people are applying for jobs online, the form that they are asked to fill out asks that question. Or if they're working with a headhunter, the headhunters will ask that question. And again, this is all just going to have to be changed. It's a question, again, you know, as Wendy and we've been talking about, people are used to asking it, but it's just really easy to stop. And instead, and you can ask an applicant what they want to earn. You can let the applicant know what the salary range is. So it's not that it's going to stop negotiation. It's just one thing that cannot be asked.
We're speaking with State Representative Anna Moeller, Democrat from Elgin, Melissa Josephs from Women Employed, and Wendy Pollack at the Shriver Center. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. We're speaking with State Representative Anna Moeller, Democrat from Elgin, Melissa Josephs with Women Employed, and Wendy Pollack from the Shriver Center, Director of the Women's Law and Policy Project. We're talking about this legislation that would bar employers from looking at previous salary history, a way to try to bridge the wage gap in Illinois. Mm-hmm. And Governor Rauner issued an outright veto. I mentioned about the numbers in the General mm-hmm. Assembly, what it got for votes previously. Representative, what are you hearing about whether you're going to be able to override or not?
Sure. I'm optimistic that we will be able to override as long as we have the legislators who voted previously for the bill, come to veto session, which I'm relatively confident that they will. I think we will be successful in overriding. I've reached out to one of the great developments with this bill was that it did pass in such a bipartisan fashion. We had 25 Republicans in the House support the bill, which was great. And I've reached out to several of my colleagues on the right and on the Republican side to ensure that they were still supportive, and they are. And so I think we'll have a good chance of.
What about in the Senate?
The Senate, as you mentioned, was a little bit closer. I think
one vote shy
of a veto-proof. Yes, there were a couple Democrats who were absent that day, and so again, if we have good attendance, I think we will be able to override in the Senate as well.
So you're the attendance monitor for this.
Yes, doing a roll call.
Melissa Josephs, where can people get more information about this issue?
Yeah, to call your legislators, you can go to womenemployed.org/equalpay, and there's a take action page there. It'll connect you to who your legislators are, your state rep and senator, and you just want to tell them to, you know, to support the bill, to vote to override the governor's veto of HB 2462, no salary history.
An interesting veto session coming up. Yeah. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about, Representative Moeller, is the issue of the community care program. And mm-hmm. we've talked about this in the past, the governor's attempts to try to change the program, privatize the program. Where do things stand right now? And I know that there is a task force that has been meeting.
Yes.
Where do we stand on this issue?
So the task force was created as part of the budget deal that we passed in July. We've been meeting for the past several months to look at the community care program to ensure that we are providing a cost-effective, high-quality program to seniors here in Illinois. The task force is scheduled to have a report completed by the end of January. It's required as per the legislation. And so we are right now meeting as a task force to put together recommendations for that proposal or that report that's due at the end of January. One of the concerns that we had initially and continue to think about and talk about is the fact that a couple stakeholder groups that are very important to senior services in Illinois were not included in the task force. AARP, which represents and advocates for seniors in Illinois, and SEIU, which represents the home health care workers here in the state, they were not appointed as part of the task force. And I and several of my colleagues were concerned that the legitimacy of the task force and the work that we were doing would be compromised because they had been shut out of the process. I'm a little bit heartened to know or to discover and to learn that their recommendations, they've been, despite not being part of the formal task force, those groups, AARP and SEIU, have been attending meetings and providing input on the program, the CCP program, and their recommendations have been included as part of the discussion that we are engaging in right now. So that is a good thing. However, I do think that not including them as part of the task force is a detriment to what we're trying to accomplish through the
and may taint the outcome of the process.
Right, right. I think we need to be inclusive. We need to be transparent. This is an important program in Illinois. It affects 40,000 seniors throughout the state. And these are important groups that that should be part of the conversation.
And I understand, too, that there still are privatization efforts underway as part of this.
Well, there is a they're doing a small pilot program on
the administration, some of the, I should say.
The administration and the Department on Aging. And we are we're monitoring that and are expecting, you know, input into that pilot program. We do have concerns that we want to make sure that we are that seniors are taken care of in Illinois. That they are staying in their homes, that they're living independently.
Because this goal has always been cost effectiveness.
Right, right. And cost effectiveness is important. We need to make sure that we're providing a high quality program that is cost effective. But it can't be at the expense of care for seniors and the most vulnerable, who tend to represent the most vulnerable populations in our state. And privatization for the sake of privatization isn't necessarily going to lead to a better outcome than what we're providing right now. And so that's something that we're keeping an eye on. And we want to make sure that we keep this, you know, high quality program here in Illinois.
Because without that quality care of in-home services, the alternative becomes the much more costly.
Absolutely. The nursing home, the full-time nursing home care that seniors may be forced to go into, and we want to avoid that. It's expensive for the state and in some cases can lead to a lower quality of life. Certainly there are great nursing homes that are out there, but if we can keep people in their homes living independently, that should be the goal of the state in this program.
That's Democratic State Representative Anna Mueller, Democrat from Elgin. Also here with Melissa Josephs, Director of Equal Opportunity Policy at Women Employed, and Wendy Pollack, Founder and Director of the Women's Law and Policy Project at the Shriver Center. Thank you all for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
That's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, State Representative Anna Mueller, Democrat from Elgin, Melissa Josephs from Woman Employed, Wendy Pollack, who is at the Shriver Center, and also my good friend Daryl Wendell for sitting in and helping out the Literacy Volunteers of Illinois. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening. And now it's time to turn things over to the great Dean Richards.